The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Common Ground Sunday Morning Practice Group. My name is Gail Iverson, and Mark is leading a retreat today at Holy Spirit Retreat Center for about 40 of the community members, and he'll be back this evening, so I'm filling in for him this morning. So we're going to start out by chanting the Buddha's words on loving kindness, and these are on page 28. And for this chant, we just try to be as present as possible while we're chanting it, being present with the sound of our voice and the sound of the voices of others who are chanting, and also to connect with the words. Now let us chant the Buddha's words on loving kindness.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none be outwards and
Before I begin the talk for this morning, I'd just like to mention the tradition of dana or generosity at Common Ground. All of the programs that are offered here are offered freely. They've all been provided by people who have come before and have felt the benefit of the teachings and so have contributed for them to continue here. So just wanted to mention that and that there are many ways to contribute, of course through money, through time, through our practice. And if there's a bowl that's right outside the door, so I'd like to make a contribution. And there's also a sheet that describes generosity that's next to the bowl if you'd like to know a little bit more about the practice of generosity. Today I want to talk about the second noble truth. And so this is kind of the four noble truths are the core of the Buddhist teachings. So they say, the Buddha says that there is suffering, there is an origin of suffering, there's a cessation of suffering, and there's a path leading to the cessation of suffering. So this is the second noble truth. It says, what is the noble truth of the origin of suffering or stress? It is the craving for sensual desires, craving for being, and craving for non-being. The instructions say this is to be understood. So it seems pretty simple and straightforward, but of course there's a lot to be learned about this noble truth. So the first thing is that we need to understand desire. And this is saying the craving for sensual desire. So in the English language, the word desire has a broad meaning. We use it to mean anything that we want. We want food, we want drink, we want physical comforts. We want to, we have a desire to have our lives in a specific way. And so all of these are fine. We just need to develop this attention, this awareness of when we are clinging to a desire, when we're attached to a particular outcome, that's when we experience this craving that results in suffering. Just for an example of a desire that is wholesome, like to read just a brief paragraph here from a essay by Tanasaro Bhikkhu. And he says, "The word Satipatthana is the name for an approach to meditation aimed at establishing sati or mindfulness. The term sati is related to the verb sarati, to remember or to keep in mind. It is sometimes translated as non-reactive awareness, free from agendas, simply present with whatever arises. But the formula for Satipatthana doesn't support that translation. Non-reactive awareness is actually an aspect of equanimity, a quality fostered in the course of Satipatthana. The activity of Satipatthana, however, definitely has a motivating agenda. The agenda is the desire for awakening, which is classed not as a cause of suffering, but as part of the path leading to its end. The role of mindfulness is to keep the mind properly grounded in the present moment in a way that will keep it on the path. To make an analogy, awakening is like a mountain on the horizon, the destination to which you are driving a car. Mindfulness is what remembers to keep attention focused on the road to the mountain, rather than letting it stay focused on glimpses of the mountain or getting distracted by other paths leading away from the road." So it's important as we're exploring, seeking to understand this truth of the origin of suffering, that we have this understanding about what is skillful desire and what is what unskillful desires are. And that's what we do through our attentiveness and our awareness. In each moment, experience is coming to us, and whenever we remember, whenever mindfulness arises, then we can reflect on the skillfulness or unskillfulness of that desire, and the actions that we choose to. The actions that we choose based on that desire. So there are these three aspects of, before I say this, I'd just like to say about a little bit more about what this craving, this clinging is. So we all have preferences, many, many preferences. We like this, we don't like that. A lot of our action is based on acting on our preferences. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with having preferences. Third Zen patriarch wrote a poem called Verses on the Faith Mind. And the opening line of that poem says, "The great way is not difficult for those who are not attached to their preferences." So this is a really important area for us to investigate. Quite a few years ago, I spent 3 months at the Bhavana Society in West Virginia, which is run by a well-known Western, well-known Vipassana teacher, Bhante Gunaratana. And Bhante Gunaratana is of Sri Lankan origin. And so at the center, they had a Sri Lankan cook who prepared the all of the well, there were that many meals because it was a monastery, so basically it was one meal at noon. And so my strong preference is for food not to be hot. I grew up in Minnesota and wasn't exposed much to hot food when I was young, so I really have a strong preference for it not being hot. But the cook was Sri Lankan, and if anyone knows about Sri Lankan food, it tends to have quite a bit of heat to it. As a matter of fact, there used to be a curry house in over in Hennepin called the Sri Lankan Curry House. My sister, who does like hot food, one time she went there, and the food was so hot, she said that she experienced that thing that she had seen in the comics, where steam comes out your ears. She actually experienced that. So, but it was very interesting. I don't know if it was because of, I was doing a meditation retreat, so I was trying to be mindful as much as possible, moment to moment. And that I accepted that. I just accepted that the food was hot and that was okay. And it just wasn't a problem. So we all have those experiences where we can see where our preferences are, you know, we know we have a preference, but it's, in that moment it's just okay. And so it's helpful for us to reflect and focus on that. And then when the outcome, when we're not able to have things the way we prefer and we are strongly not liking that, then we can be kind to ourselves, first of all. And then we can see if it's possible to soften a bit about that and to open up. And see if we can allow some of that attachment to loosen. So there are three parts of this truth, that three areas that the Buddha breaks down where our craving tends to arise. So the sensual desire, it's any experience that's coming to us through any of our six senscapes. So it can be through seeing or hearing, smelling, tasting, through thinking or through feeling, where we have these attachments. And so we have lots of opportunities to explore and investigate. And it really is that kind of having that kind of attitude of bringing, you know, an interest to our experience, bringing a desire for understanding. Sometimes it's really helpful to sort of reflect on our faith in the teachings and to see if they're, you know, kind of where that is in a particular moment of if we have faith that this is possible, that that it's possible to understand this origin of suffering, to become clear about it. So the second part of the second area where there is craving is craving for being. And so this is any time where we want to be someone in particular. We want to example, be a good parent or a good driver or a good worker or anything that that we want to become. And not, again, you know, many of those things are skillful desires, but it's when we have some idea in mind of how the outcome should be, and then when that outcome doesn't match the idea that we had, then we get disappointed, angry, upset, irritated, whatever our reaction is. And then that is not skillful. That is a being has its roots in greed or ill will and not understanding. So it's important to look at those moments of wanting to be whatever, and to see if there's what kind of, if any, attachment is present. And then the third part of this is a craving for non-being. So we're all familiar with this. We are being, and then all of a sudden we're tired of being. We don't want to be anymore. We, you know, so like at the end of the day, you know, we come home and you know, we're tired and we're hungry, and you know, we just like to kind of collapse into our bed or collapse into our chair and, you know, read a book or watch some TV or whatever. You know, we'd like to our being to be ended at that point. We'd like to distract ourselves from the discomfort of being. And so this is you know, non-being is a very broad, this craving for non-being is very broad, from, you know, it goes all the way from suicide to being mildly irritated. So again, a lot of area for exploration and a lot of opportunity to investigate and to see what is a skillful way of relating. And usually the most skillful way of relating is to the best of our ability to bring this okayness, to be aware of whatever the experience is in the present moment, and to bring this okayness to the best of our ability to that. One of the ways that I find helpful to look at this is to think of it as a process of reconciliation or self-forgiveness. Well, there's so much that things that we regret, or things that we would like, you know, projecting into the future, things that we would like to be a certain way. And so just having this attitude of reconciliation towards our experience can be a really kind and gentle way to kind of encourage us to be interested and to investigate it. Just like to read briefly from, this is a talk that Archbishop Desmond Tutu gave. Said, if you asked even the most sober students of South African affairs what they thought was going to happen to South Africa a few years ago, almost universally they predicted that the most ghastly catastrophe would befall us, that as sure as anything we would be devastated by a comprehensive bloodbath. It did not happen. Instead, the world watched with amazement, indeed awe, at the long lines of South Africans of all races snaking their way to their polling booths on April 27, 1994. And they thrilled as they witnessed Nelson Mandela being inaugurated as the first democratically elected president of South Africa on May 10, 1994. Nearly everyone described what they were witnessing, a virtually bloodless, reasonably peaceful transition from justice and oppression to freedom and democracy as a miracle. When the disaster did not overtake us, there were those who said, wait until the black-led government takes over, then the blacks who have suffered so grievously in the past will engage in the most fearful orgy of revenge and retribution against the whites. Well, the prediction was not fulfilled. Instead, the world saw something quite unprecedented. They saw the process of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. When perpetrators of some of the most gruesome atrocities were given amnesty in exchange for a full disclosure of the facts of the offense, instead of revenge and retribution, this new nation chose to tread the difficult path of confession, forgiveness, and reconciliation. So I find that a really inspiring way to look at the possibility of how we can relate to the things from our past that we regret, and for the things that we attribute the harms and hurts to other people. Now, of course, reconciliation is something that can't be forced. It's a process, and it's something that takes time. But I think we can really work with this idea when we're working with this truth of suffering, and just look at that possibility of, in any moment, if there can be this self-forgiveness, and then that can go out to forgiveness of others as well. So I'd like to stop there and just take a few minutes to see if there are any comments or anything that experiences that you have had working with preferences or with reconciliation. Just be interesting to hear from anybody who would be interested in sharing.
Non-being, it does not refer then to, I want this to stop. It's more, I want that part of Lynn who has that attitude to stop. I mean, can you just shed some light on that?
So I would say that this this desire, this craving for non-being, it's just, at least on one level, we can look at it as a really in a really simple way, and that is that whenever something arises that we don't like, we don't want, something that we would like to end in that moment, that that is an example of that. Of, we don't want to be that person who's experiencing that discomfort or unpleasantness that's arising in that moment. And so, if we usually we do two things. We either try to push it away, we try to push it away like by distracting ourselves, and not that there's anything wrong. Of course, But, you know, that's our human coping mechanism to a large degree, is to distract ourselves. But it's not a very skillful means, because that feeds that habit, and so and it doesn't lead to clarity of that. So if that more skillful thing is to turn towards whatever that discomfort or dislike is in that moment, and just see if we can be present with it, if we can have an interest, if we can explore it, and see what that result is. But having that different, so sometimes we distract ourselves. The other way that we often deal with that, those types of feelings, are that we get so in, you know, like there, that is us, and, you know, that is all we are, that is all we are ever going to be. We're just so, we really wallow in it, we get so absorbed in it that, you know, we can't, that's all we can see. We're just really stuck in that. And we can't see it clearly, and that it's just something that's arising in that moment, and that that will end. There's a lot more that could be said about not being, but I'll stop there. Thanks for asking. So anything else that, any questions or comments that people have?
What the pattern I see in myself is a tendency to obsess, and I can heal one area of obsession, and then it sort of squirts out into another area, and there's always something to obsess about. And lately I've been beginning to notice that if I'm doing something repetitively, for example, crossword puzzles, I can get really lost in crossword puzzles, and or puzzles of any kind, which don't really take me anywhere, but they kind of put me in a novel place. And then I'm beginning to see that there's something I'm avoiding, and I'm thinking that perhaps it's that desire to for non-being. But not skillful.
Yeah, I think that's an appropriate, accurate assessment of that. And so then, you know, I mean, one thing we can do is we can see when that desire arises, what happens if we don't go there. Then, you know, what feelings do arrive, what thoughts arise. It could just be a, not something like, well, I'm never going to work another crossword or never, you know, but just like this one time, I'm just going to see what happens if I, don't do that, then what am I going to do? Then there's kind of the thing of, what am I going to become now? So then we kind of get into the other, the flip side of that. But just to see what that is, and it's really just really good awareness to see that maybe that's not the most skillful thing to do. Maybe it's fine. Maybe there's something wrong with it, and, but it obviously causing you some stress. So a good place to investigate. I think we have time for one more. Did you?
Um, with the talk this morning, maybe you think about the need to be mindful and present. I think we often develop stories about individuals in our lives or whole groups sometimes, and it keeps us from maybe really hearing something or understanding that might come through that person. I had a granddaughter who was lived in Arkansas, rural Arkansas, probably didn't have more than a second of their big education. And I think, you know, maybe because of those labels, people would think that she had anything to offer. But one time she told me that even the devil can tell the truth. You have to make sure that he doesn't use it against you. Which to me, you know, begs the question of having some discernment and not being, you know, kind of blocked off and rigid and putting labels on things that might have a lot more there. So, and that's always challenging.
Thanks. Thank you. So I see the children are standing outside the door now, so